powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
If you're just now joining us, we are talking about Baseball America's top 100 rankings for 2022. You had Julio Rodriguez at number 2, George Kirby 12, Noel V. Marte 18, Matt Brash 45, Brandon Williamson 83. Plenty to be excited about for Seahawks fans. So let's dive in a little deeper with Mariners insider Shannon Dreher joining us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Hey, Shannon, how's it going?
Good. Good to be talking to you, Stacey.
I actually wanted to start with Brandon Williamson, number 83 on that list. You had a conversation with him on last night's Hot Stove show. Tell us a bit more about him.
Yeah, you know, he is an interesting one. He's one of those ones where you've known the name for a while. And when he was drafted, he was kind of that second guy in that Mariners draft. And you started to hear things about him as the year went on, like really exceeding expectations. One of those ones where they've scouted him, they've done all the work on him, and then he gets into the organization that is better than expected and taking big steps forward. And I think part of that is he was a late bloomer. You know, an interesting kid. He comes from a town, Welcome, Minnesota, population 686. Never played travel ball, went to a small community college, only played 1 year at a major Division I baseball with Texas Christian. So really kind of, just didn't have a lot of what, when you see a lot of the top pitching prospects these days, not only are they, you know, going to a big high school on a travel ball squad, but they're also working out at the high performance centers. He did none of this, and he got it all in community college and 1 year at TCU, and has continued to develop. And I know there's a lot of excitement around what he has done. And I think one of the most significant things that he has done is last year, none of the arms that we're talking about that could break through in 2022 pitched over 100 innings. In fact, they are well below that. And when you look at everything that they've gone through in the last couple of years with the COVID shutdown, the no minor leagues and whatnot, you still have to be careful with them. But he was at 98 innings, so he's the closest to that. Four polished pitches and a lot of excitement around what he has done.
Now, Shannon, when it comes to, you know, being closest, can you put that into context for us? You know, we were kind of debating that, you know, just before we ended our break. Like, is that something where there's enough build up to where, you know, you could see before the All-Star break or more towards later in the season?
Well, and this is where it just becomes so complicated because there are so many. And, you know, you talk about George Kirby, you talk about Williamson, you talk about Brash, who could have made an appearance last year. He was on hand if needed that last week. You just kind of go down the list, and they've talked about even wanting Emerson Hancock, who has the fewest innings of all, that perhaps could make a debut next year as well. And I think that one of the two things that they're going to have to keep in mind here, obviously, is you're going to have to control the innings, but you're also going to have to make some evaluations. And some of it might depend on where the team is, as well as, are all these guys starters? Are any of these guys going to be relievers? Are they starters that maybe you start in the pen? That isn't something that we've seen as you know, commonly in recent years, but that is a way that major league pitchers, starters, have broken in traditionally. It's not out of the question to think that perhaps you see something like that. So they're going to have to manage those innings. If the Mariners are pushing towards a postseason in September, which I am sure is the intent, then you don't want them peaking too early in the season, and you're going to have to manage innings accordingly. So I think that's going to come into play as well. There'll be innings and how you use them.
I'll leave Noel V. Marte off this list, but kind of a bit related to this question. You've got Julio, George Kirby, Matt Brash, Brandon Williamson. When might fans see these guys?
When might?
Give us an exact day, time, ideally a game,
exact
series.
Hang on. Well, let me get out that list. Let me unlock the ball
and
take that one out.
We were thinking more
I'm
pre or post All-Star. Thanks. Between us.
Don't tell Curtis, okay?
We won't.
This is just for you.
Oh, my God, Curtis, you're here.
Interesting.
Hey, guys.
I think Julio Rodriguez is going to be the most interesting because I think he could really force the issue. And when you talk with Jerry Dipoto, there really aren't that many more boxes that need to be checked with Julio. But It was interesting because he has said this from the start of the offseason is some of what will play into when they bring him up is what they do in this offseason. If they're not able to go out and get that extra outfielder that they would like to get right now, that extra left fielder that, you know, and it has, you're not looking at a bench member. You're looking at somebody that can play every day and probably rotate through positions and be a significant part of that order. If that player isn't acquired and they're kind of patchworking things until they can get to Julio, then Julio's going to get there sooner. If that's not the case, then I think Julio gets a little bit more polishing. He had a very odd season last year, and one that they endorsed in that he was just in and out of the minors, in that he was taking part in the Olympics and part of the Dominican national team, and they valued that experience. So they let him do that, and it all went well with that, but it wasn't. It was very different. So I think giving him a little bit more of a, you're going to play every day, you're not going to be flying internationally a few times, that might be part of it. But what's interesting with Julio is, and we saw this last year, and this was the impression that I got from him in spring training, was his approach he's matured very much with his approach. You know, he has all the talent in the world, but now last year in spring training, you saw him learn at bat to at bat and what different pitchers were trying to do to him. And that I found immensely interesting. And that's, I think, what could make things difficult should he, you know, not only put up the numbers in spring training, but show that approach and show that he's ready, then that'll be tough. As far as the rest, I think Brash would be the first pitcher you would see. Then probably Williamson. And I think it could be hard to say no to George Kirby. But again, they're not going to want these guys to be done in August. So the pitchers in particular, they'll have to be careful with.
It'll all be really exciting to see how it unfolds, Shannon. One of the other things that people often skip over is the fact that, look, you've got free agency. How do you better the team? You've got these young, exciting prospects that are continuing to work their way up. And then you forget about some of the younger guys that still have to develop. They still have to take steps forward, Shannon. Out of the group, out of the guys like J.P. Crawford, Ty France, Jared Kelnick, you know, you go down, Logan Gilbert, who are some of the guys that you are the most excited to see, you know, take that next step forward?
No, pretty much all of the above, and they do it kind of differently. I think you have to be excited about what you saw from Jared Kelnick in September. He's second on the club in WRC+. Seven home runs, strikeout rate he cut down, still up there, but it wasn't the worst on the team at that point, and certainly wasn't what it was when he was sent down earlier in the season. So you saw him take those steps forward, and I think it was important to see that, you know, he was able to get his emotions under control. He was able to lay off that down and away pitch that just got him every time earlier in the season. And, you know, make those adjustments and understand what big league pitchers were doing to him and understand that he was going to have to make adjustments. It wasn't enough just to go out there and be Jared Kelnick. Baseball is a day-to-day sport, and I think he really got that. But I think what was also important was that he saw that. I think, you know, the confidence, it had to have taken a hit with what had happened earlier in the season. So I think that he should be starting from a great spot because he had a fantastic September. J.P. Crawford, you look at him and you look at, well, he's been in the bigs for a while right now. He's a team leader. Is this who he is? Is this, I mean, how much more room is there for improvement with him? Well, he's the kind of guy that just keeps taking those steps and is a tireless worker and a smart worker and baseball smart. So I'm not ready to shut the door on it and say, okay, this is what J.P. Crawford is at the plate. I think that there is more with that. And, you know, with his eye at the plate, with his ability to take smart swings, he's got one of the best O swing ratings on the team. I think you could see a little bit more from him offensively, and we'll see where that goes. As far as the rest, you know, Logan Gilbert, great start to his big league career. Of course, he is going to keep developing. But what's going to be different this year, and it was interesting, Jake, because you said they have to keep developing, is the thing to keep in mind now is over the last few years, it's been all about the young players. It's been all about their development. Well, not necessarily those players that we were just talking about right here, but everybody who comes up from now on, they have to earn that spot. Nothing is going to be given to them. It's no longer going to be about them getting experience at the big league level. So they are going to be pushing for those spots. They will have to push for those spots. And that should make things interesting from a competition standpoint.
Speaking of competition and pushing for those spots, we were talking about a couple veterans on this team. I know Jake kind of already introduced this conversation. We've been having it, but I want to get to a couple more. Obviously, we can imagine who might be in the outfield, but I get so many questions on the Mac and Jack's text line. Shannon, I know you get these tweets all the time about what's going to happen at first, what's going to happen at third, what's going to happen in center, if it's Kyle Lewis in center, and if you have Evan White back competing at first. How do you see those two guys factoring in?
Well, I mean, that's it, competing. Evan White's going to have to earn that job back, and he's going to have to be healthy. And we don't know where either are right now health-wise. We won't know until we see them in spring training. But Evan's got a pretty tall hill to climb right now. Ty France has taken that spot. They've added another infielder in Adam Frazier. They could add another one after that. So, he's going to have to go to work, and everything that I just said about it's about getting the big leaguers time and experience at the big leagues. He's not going to have that anymore. So that's, you know, likely going to happen in the minor leagues. As far as Kyle Lewis goes, I think it would be a miracle if you could have somebody who's had the number of knee surgeries he has had in center field again, and certainly that wouldn't happen from the get-go. I think realistically you're going to be probably trying to have to work a lineup and a configuration where you can get Kyle Lewis as many designated hitter days as possible. So will he be in the lineup? I mean, I think he's going to have to, A, show that he's healthy, and not only show that he is healthy, but you want him starting from a good spot as well. He has not played a lot in the last 2 years, so it would not surprise me if he is not 100% in spring training, or if he gets a week late start, or if spring training is significantly shorter this year, that they might want to start him in the minors anyway, just to get him those regular at-bats and find out what he can do away from the pressure of having to go out on the field knowing that everything you do impacts a win or a loss that matters on such bigger of a scale. So I think it's very much wait and see with him. But once he is healthy and up and running, he should be a contributor. I just think it'll probably be more from that DH spot than any other spot.
Shannon, now, quick question for us is just kind of looking at the Howdy for the hot stove. You talked about the Mariners dominate the zone pitching camp. Tell us what we should know about that.
Well, my first question to you is, I've been more formal with Howdy on the hot stove. Can I call him Howdy on the hot stove, or should it be James Osborne?
I think you should call him James Howdy Osborne. James Osborne is fine.
Okay.
Keep it warm.
I'm going with James. I haven't called him Howdy yet. I feel like maybe that's not appropriate for that show. We'll see what happens.
Fair.
The Dominate the Zone camp is underway right now. It's been about a week, and about, 25 of the Mariners' top pitching prospects and their catchers are down there working every day, working toward further development, and also getting some classroom stuff in as well. It's an intensive pitching camp where they do individual work and the classroom work, and it goes right up until spring training. So kind of fun to think that, you know what, pitchers and catchers actually already have reported to Peoria, and they're able to do it because they're not on the 40-man rosters. They are not impacted by the lockout or under the CBA. So that work continues, and most of the Mariners' top pitching prospects are down there getting daily work in the gym and kind of the pitching labs that they have, and just getting a real head start on the season.
All right. She is Mariners insider Shannon Dreyer for 710 ESPN Seattle. Shannon, always good talking to you. Hopefully, this lockout is able to end sometime soon. We can get you on to actually talk about free agency and moves the team can make and look ahead to spring training. I'm mostly excited for those. So hopefully we have some news on that front soon. But until then, Shannon, we'll talk to you later.
Yeah, that's going to be a heck of a week.
Thanks, Shannon. All right. She is Shannon Insider, Mariners Insider for 710sports.com. Let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacy.
Headline number one, the Seahawks have officially requested an interview with Ed Donatell and have also reportedly done the same with Bears defensive coordinator Sean Desai. for the vacancy left by Ken Norton Jr. What is the real headline?
Also reportedly throwing his name into the mix, an up-and-comer named Peter Clay Carroll. Because guess what, you guys? It's Pete Carroll's defense. He's going to be the de facto defensive coordinator. If I had to bet money, it would be on Clint Hurt being defensive coordinator. Maybe they have co-DCs, but at the end of the day, it's Pete's defense. And in my opinion, I don't know how many big changes you're going to see to scheme or whatever. I think it's all going to depend on the guys they get in here. I think personnel is going to decide a lot more of the kind of defense you see next year, whether they take a big step forward, than will a new defensive coordinator.
Yeah, it is something that you're going to have to look at and say, all right, well, I think the conversation does shift from, you know, looking at some of these defensive coordinators and saying, you know, hey, there's only so many times that you can point to a defensive coordinator who's really just running the overall defense that Pete Carroll wants, right? And I believe that when you're looking in this process and Pete Carroll's moving on from someone that he really, really regards and respects in Ken Norton Jr., that there has to be more than just, oh, well, it wasn't good enough. I have the wrong figurehead. I don't have the right voice. I need to bring somebody else in to run the exact defense that I want or that we have done over the last 4 years. I do believe that we're going to see change from a schematic perspective, and it's evident in the type of individuals that are being interviewed for the job. Clint Hurt doesn't come from Pete Carroll's scheme. Yes, he was in, you know, he's been part of the staff for the last couple years, but, you know, he came from, you know, Vic Fangio, who also, you know, Ed Donatell, who has been interviewed, came from Vic Fangio. Sean Desai came from Vic Fangio's coaching tree. So there is a correlation here between all three candidates that we have heard of so far, and going to be curious to see how this shakes out. And Stacey, to your point, you can change the scheme all you want. You can try to find the right teachers, and that certainly would help. But it comes down to personnel. And can you get the right personnel in with this defense if you are going to make those personnel changes? And that's what I'm going to be very curious about. But it does give me hope and optimism that there will be positive change going into 2022.
Headline Rewrites.
Headline number two, as we talked about with Shannon Dreher to start this hour, the Mariners placed five prospects in Baseball America's top 100 list for 2022, led by Julio Rodriguez at number two. What's the real headline?
Now, the exciting headline is that Julio Rodriguez is number two. The real headline, the thing that you should probably be taking away from this, is Emerson Hancock no longer in the top 100. Last year, Baseball America had him at number 57. What's that mean for Mariners fans?
Very true, and that's something that you don't want to see, and I would assume that a lot of it had to do with his injury, but, you know, you talk about, you know, Kyle Glazer and what he had to say about, you know, Emerson Hancock, that maybe some view him more as a reliever than they do a starter. I don't know. I mean, I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that he was injured, the fact that there is some question about his overall arm health, so... Who knows? Maybe Emerson Hancock can have a fully healthy season in the minor leagues, show that he's got the stuff and the ability to be a starter, and he works himself back into that. But the good thing is that, look, Brandon Williamson is in. He is replacing. So you are essentially, you know, continuing to prove that you have a ton of arms in your farm system that are, you know, have a ton of talent, that have a ton of upside, and that you know... The talent is there to where Mariners fans should be extremely excited. And obviously the one that you're super excited to see, that everybody's itching to see, is Julio Rodriguez there, ranked as the number two prospect right now. And, man, I cannot wait.
Headline Rewrites.
Headline number three, Texans GM Nick Caserio says Deshaun Watson, quote, more than likely will not play for the Texans again. What's the real headline?
In related news, I also will not be playing for the Texans. So that's about as relevant information as we got from him. Of course he's not playing for the Texans again. The Texans have been trying to trade him for the better part of a year. He's made it clear he doesn't want to play for the Texans. I mean, this relationship has been over. The Texans, though, just seem once again like a directionless franchise, with all the problems being right at the very top. No clue who they're going to hire as their head coach. No clue why they fired their head coach given that roster, and no clue where they're going from here.
Yeah, it's true. And that is the one thing that when you're looking at the Houston Texans and you hired Nick Caserio to be your GM and he's the one that's making all the decisions within that organization, all right, you can have 1 year to kind of get your feet underneath you and to go through this disastrous season knowing that you're not going to have Deshaun Watson moving forward. But from this point forward, it counts. From this point forward, you're going to be heavily scrutinized in a real way in terms of job security, in terms of what overall people think of Nick Caserio as a GM and what he is able to put together and the identity that they eventually build. And that's why this next head coaching hire is going to be so important for them. And I would expect it comes from the New England Patriot coaching tree, whether that's Gerard Mayo, whether that's Brian Flores, or whether that's trying to lure someone like Jason McDaniel, which I don't think Jason McDaniels would go to that situation. But I would keep my eye on Gerard Mayo and Brian Flores as targets for Nick Caserio.
All right. We're going to take a look around the rest of the NFL. Now, I'm going to start with a story out of San Francisco where the 49ers, the only wildcard team to advance, going to take on the number one seed, Green Bay Packers, at Lambeau, now have another injury to keep an eye on. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
All right, taking a look around the rest of the NFL, we've got playoff odds for every single team to make the Super Bowl. A really, really high seed that's been pretty dominant all year long. The third longest odds to make the Super Bowl. I'll get to that in just a couple seconds. Before I do, let's go to the only wildcard team to advance to the divisional round, the San Francisco 49ers. They're already dealing with injuries to Nick Bosa, who has a concussion, trying to get through protocol ahead of this game at Lambeau against Green Bay. They've got Fred Warner, their middle linebacker, who's working to get back from injury. And now they've got Jimmy Garoppolo, dealing with not only a torn ligament in his thumb on his throwing hand, but now also a slight shoulder sprain. So I would guess he still plays, but certainly an injury to watch for this week. Is Jimmy G going to start at Green Bay? We'll see on Saturday.
Well, yeah, we certainly will, and it's going to be really important. I mean, one of the things that they did highlight in the broadcast with Jim Nance and Tony Romo was the fact that, look, like him or not, Jimmy Garoppolo has been a winning quarterback for the 49ers, and they have been significantly better with him under center than without him. So you talk about, hey, would this give Trey Lance an opportunity and all the dynamic things that Trey Lance can do? Trey Lance is a rookie who's barely played this year. Your best chance of winning, your only chance of winning, is if you have Jimmy Garoppolo back there as your quarterback. And so that's something that you're hoping to see. And I'm sure that Jimmy Garoppolo is doing everything he can to ensure that he is going to play. So that would be a big blow for them, not to mention the fact that they are, questionable to have Fred Warner and Nick Bosa out on the field. I mean, Stacey, this is a series of bad injuries or bad things to be worrying about with some key starters here.
All right, next story, speaking of those teams. So you've got the longest odds, the shortest odds for every team to make the Super Bowl. So no surprise here, NFC's number one overall seed, and I would say arguably the best team in football wire to wire, not including week one, so maybe not wire to wire, but the Green Bay Packers have the best odds to win the Super Bowl. Following them are the Chiefs, which have not the same odds, but they're pretty close. Packers and Chiefs at 350, 380. You've got the Bills and Bucks also. They're 4-5. They're a bit closer in their odds. And then you've got the Rams, Titans, the number one seed in the AFC with the third longest odds to make a Super Bowl. And despite winning the AFC North, the Bengals have the longest odds to make the Super Bowl, longer than even the 49ers.
Seriously?
Yes. I mean, that's according to this random. I mean, they're bettors in Vegas or sports books or whatever that are setting this. So it's like where people are placing money, where people are betting, what people consider to be the longest odds. And like,
yeah.
So it's, I don't know that, yeah, there's like some NFL experts. There's logic to it. The Packers should have the best odds to make the Super Bowl. They're the best team. And it makes sense that the Bengals are one of the lowest,
right?
Because I would say they're the worst of the division winners. But
it is true. And, just as you saw with their ability to barely beat the Raiders, I mean, it makes you wonder, again, as I said before, how concerned are you that this is a new head coach being in a playoff environment like this, a a new quarterback being in a playoff environment. There's a lot of young guys that have never been in this situation before, and how do they handle it, right? And so I thought Joe Burrow did an outstanding job in their game, but the Raiders, I mean, they were hanging with them the entire way. So I think Cincinnati has to play significantly better on both sides of the ball in order to give them a chance to win and pull off, you know, I would say a pretty big upset over Tennessee, but we'll have to wait and see on this one, because Tennessee has done an outstanding job of taking the ball away from opposing offenses and being able to establish a very, very heavy run attack. And that's obviously what Tennessee is going to be relying on again in this game.
I got to say also, I don't disagree with the idea that last year's Super Bowl winner, who was, by the way, the odds-on favorite to repeat as Super Bowl champions to start the season, and I would say even like midway through the season, still a favorite to repeat, I am not surprised that they have the fourth longest odds. Now, they're like middle of the pack. They have better odds than the Rams, the Titans, the 49ers, and the Bengals. But they've also dealt with a ton of injuries. They lost Chris Godwin for the season. They obviously no longer have Antonio Brown. They have injuries pretty much on both sides of the ball, and most recently with their starting right tackle, Tristan Wirfs, one of the best yeah. offensive lines in football, now dealing with a major injury to pretty much their best player.
Yeah, it is a big, big concern. And you talk about, you know, the one thing that the Rams do well is they can get after the passer, and they've got some tremendous pass rush with Von Miller, Leonard Floyd, and Aaron Donald. And if you're Tampa Bay, man, you want to have yourself at full strength all the way. And Tristan Wirfs would be a huge help in those matchups against Von Miller and Leonard Floyd. So definitely not something you want to be struggling with as you're going into this game, knowing also that the Rams got the best of Tampa Bay earlier on this season. So I know that there's been a lot that's gone on since then. We're in the playoffs, and Tom Brady is near impossible to beat in the playoffs, but I do like the Rams in this matchup, not to win, but I think they're going to make a tremendous game out of it.
All right, next story here. This one, kind of a feel-good story out of Georgia, where Mecole Hardman's father connected with a woman who has medical issues. So here's the story. His father, a FedEx driver, connected with this woman who has some serious medical challenges where she has issues getting to, like, the end of her driveway. And so she requested that those packages be delivered to the porch of her home. This is in Athens, Georgia. And then Mecole Hardman's father says, well, tell me, you know, like, hey, what happened? Like, she's just talking to her. She breaks down in tears, talks about everything that she's gone through with health problems through most of her life. She's had more than 24 surgeries. It becomes this like weird moment where two random strangers connect on this very personal level. And then his father reaches out to Mecole Hardman, gets him on FaceTime, who then has like a encouraging of Lindsay, and this is the woman, talks to the woman's son, and it just becomes this really nice moment. If you're looking for a feel-good story out of the NFL this week, how about that one, where Mecole Hardman Junior and senior both make a very random connection with a stranger and her son to just help brighten everyone's day.
Yeah, I mean, it's tremendous, right? I mean, when you look at that story, it just is very cool to be able to see, you know, hey, look, parents of an athlete, you know, continuing to just carry on with their regular jobs and their regular life, and you know, being able to see someone that is hurting and to, you know, have that kindness to go out of their way to, you know, make that person's life a little bit easier in just some small way, and then to, you know, bring a smile to their face. It's just a great heartwarming story, and great job by them.
All right, voting for Rookie of the Year ongoing. We'll see who wins that one. I told you guys last week when the finalists were announced who they are, so let's go ahead and talk about who we think should win. You've got Ja'Marr Chase, Mac Jones, Micah Parsons, Jalen Waddle, Kyle Pitts, Najee Harris. I think at the time we said, how do you not give it to Ja'Marr Chase? How would you not? I mean, even in his first playoff appearance, 116 yards for the Bengals, a huge part of that win and a huge part of the reason that the Bengals not just won the AFC North but advanced to the divisional round. If there is a contender here to take it away from him, do you go with Mac Jones as a quarterback? I mean, the Pats had a pretty awful outing in the wild card round, now out of the playoffs.
Yeah, no, they did. I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, I think that when you're talking about this matchup, I mean, I think that you're looking at a group that has the ability to you know, pull off the upset. They have the ability to make this happen. But I really think that ultimately the top seeds in this playoff, Stacey, are the ones that are going to survive in advance. I mean, outside of maybe the Rams matchup, is there any team that you view that could potentially upset?
You know what? Let's actually talk about that in a couple minutes, because that was going to be the next thing I want to get to here is, if you have to make the case, I told you those odds of all these teams to advance. If you have to make the case for one of the teams that has the worst odds to advance to the Super Bowl, I want to hear it. It's coming up next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
In order, the team with the best odds, two longest odds to win a Super Bowl this year. This is from Bleacher Report, getting it from Vegas Sportsbooks. You've got the Packers, Chiefs, Bills, Bucks for favorites. And then the longest odds in order go to the Rams. The Titans. The Rams have better odds than the Titans right now. The 49ers and the Bengals. So here was my challenge. You need to make your case for those teams with the longest odds. I want to hear them. Now, one of the easiest ones you can say is, someone has to win between the Bengals and Titans, because here's the schedule you're looking at for the divisional round. On Saturday, you've got the Bengals taking on the Titans. Titans as the number one seed in the AFC hosting that one. You've also got the Packers, number one seed in the NFC, hosting the 49ers. Then on Sunday, you've got the Buccaneers hosting the Rams and the Chiefs hosting the Bills. So, Jake, you have to make your case for either the Bengals, the Titans, the 49ers, the Rams, to win the Super Bowl, or why they can upset.
Okay,
the Bills and
so
Chiefs are like 2-3, so I'm not counting them as any kind of upset.
Yeah, I would say that the team that I would pick to be the underdog that could go far would be the Rams. I definitely could see this matchup where, look, not only Sony Michel, who's been with the team for the majority of the season, but Cam Akers, who, if you remember, towards the end of the season last year, it came on in a huge way for the Rams offense and was really a dynamic runner, and was able to get involved in the passing game as well. And they felt like they were finding an answer there. And then he tears his Achilles, you know, in the summer and really set them back. So getting him back and the way that he looked running the football was very encouraging to see. And if the Rams can have a balanced attack offensively, to match and marry with what Matthew Stafford and Cooper Kupp and Odell Beckham Jr. have been able to do, man, it makes them extremely tough. And you mentioned Tristan Wirfs potentially not playing and him being out. Well, I mean, that's smelling blood in the water if you're Aaron Donald, Leonard Floyd, and Von Miller and that pass rushing unit for the Rams. So to me, they're the best equipped team to take on the higher seed and ultimately beat them.
Yeah, I think the Rams were the easiest one to make, just given the pass rush that they had and given who Matthew Stafford can be when he's at his very best. Like, Matthew Stafford, when he's on, Matthew Stafford, when he is functioning on all levels in Sean McVay's offense with those weapons, even now without Robert Woods, but still with Cooper Kupp, who, by the way, a unanimous first-team Pro Bowl. Was he unanimous All-Pro, first-team Pro Bowl? I mean, first-team All-Pro or Pro Bowl. He got both, but one of them was unanimous.
All-Pro,
first-team All-Pro, unanimous vote. He's been one of the best players in football this year, and he already is, but this year he's been even better, if that was possible. That connection feels unstoppable sometimes. Like, there are times when you look out and you're like, how is Cooper Kupp open? Like, how does Cooper Kupp have checks watch 150 yards right now? Like, it's the third quarter. You know that Cooper Kupp is on fire. How's no one stopping him? And then you just realize, like, this guy just gets open. It's unlike anything I've seen. Like, he is one of the best receivers in the league right now. And then you have, obviously, a pass rush that's just killer. Aaron Donald, best defensive tackle in the game, maybe the best defensive tackle in history.
Well, Stacey, maybe the thing that we're looking at that we're overlooking is the fact that Odell Beckham Jr., like, he's that cancer. He hasn't really spread yet. I mean, it looks nice. He's caught six touchdowns since he's been with the team. But
you just wait.
It's going to show up in this game, and it's really going to give them a problem.
The Rams, I think it's the easiest bet to make. The Rams, though, of those four teams that have the longest odds, have the best odds. So So the Rams actually have better odds than the Titans, 49ers, and Bengals. So now I am challenging you guys to make your case for either the 49ers, Bengals, or Titans. If I have to choose, I'm going Titans. But
are you?
I am. That's the easy route. And either Titans or Bengals have to advance. They play each other on Saturday.
See, here's the thing, though. With Tennessee, they have a great running game, and if they got Derrick Henry back, then maybe that would change my perception. That would change my perception of this situation. But I view Tennessee as the weakest one seed I've seen in a long time. I don't view them as a one seed at all in the NFL.
There was an ESPN Plus article that mentioned that exact same thing yesterday, and Mike Lefko, producer of Wyman and Bob, he's a Titans fan, and had a really funny tweet about it. He goes, "This is highly insulting. The 2008 Titans, who were also a number one seed, were clearly the worst number one seed overall."
The Titans are just one of those teams, man. It's like, you feel like you can never fully bet on them, despite the fact that they've had so much talent go in and out of that building.
It's true, and I shout out to Mike Lefko, love him to death, and I do love that we have a little producers, matchup going up here with the Cincinnati and Justin, who's a producer in the morning, a big Bengals fan, versus Mike Lefko and his Tennessee Titans.
They should get a bet going for that, by the way.
Yeah, they definitely should. If they don't have anything going, that's a missed opportunity.
Yeah,
but
the loser has to produce the other person's show for them.
That would be good. I think Justin would win on that one, because he wouldn't have to wake up so dang early in the morning. Oh my gosh.
So either you do the job you do every day, or you sleep in.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And a lot of motivation for Justin to be riding on that bet. But like Cincinnati, to me, I view this as a very even matchup, because Cincinnati, with their big playability, what they're able to do, it really comes down to whether or not they can, shut down Tennessee's running game and can get their offense back on the field enough to have an impact on the game. And you obviously know that Mike Vrabel and that offense, they're going to stick to what they've done great over the season, what's gotten them there, and that is, stick it to the ground attack and trying to keep Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase sitting on the bench.
Yeah. All right. You know what? You could make a case for the 49ers. I don't know how comfortable I feel.
Not a strong one, I don't think.
Not a strong one, because here's the thing. The 49ers, the one team of those four that we didn't talk about, they're taking on Green Bay at Lambeau. And by the way, you've got Jimmy G, who has a sprained shoulder, and his throwing shoulder, and a torn ligament in his thumb. You've got Nick Bosa with a concussion. Fred Warner has, I think, an ankle injury, so not looking great. Although, you never know. I mean, Debo Samuel can be explosive. You never know. You could get Green Bay on a bad day, but I think Green Bay advancing to the NFC Conference Championship for the third year in a row might be the safest bet out of the weekend. We'll find out, though. All right. So we are doing Hype Train at 1:30. Speaking of the Packers as the odds-on favorite to win a Super Bowl, I have a Hype Train that I wonder if you guys will be eager to join, because it disputes that theory. I've got a new favorite that could win the Super Bowl. We'll see what you think about that. That's coming up at 1:30. Before we get to any of that, though, the latest on the Seahawks search for their new defensive coordinator. It's coming your way next.